Okay, today I'm going to be talking about the relationship between access to parks and changes in weight status. First, I'd like to say I have no financial relationships to disclose. And start off with acknowledging my co-authors on this project, Yuyan Wang, Melanie Levy, Joelle Wallstein, and Deborah Cohen, and also the funding for this work. All right. So a little bit of background, which many of you have probably heard before, but just in case you haven't, obesity increases the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, stroke, and some cancers. The CDC has estimated that in 2008 dollars, the medical cost associated with obesity was $147 billion. And I should point out that when I say medical costs, this doesn't account for the other costs that are associated with health conditions that aren't related to medical care. So missing work, missing school, those kinds of things, lost productivity. And then finally, currently 35% of U.S. adults are obese, or I say currently because this is the most recent data from the NHANES survey, 2011 and 12. All right, this slide shows trends in obesity between 1960 and 2008. The red line shows rates of obesity. The yellowish line shows rates of overweight. And you'll see that the rates of overweight have been pretty consistent over this time period, but that in the 1960s and 70s, around 15% of adults were obese. But by 2000, that rate had climbed to more than 30%. And currently, as I mentioned, it's around 35%. Now, the good news is that the prevalence of obesity hasn't changed significantly since 2003. So we're hopeful that maybe this dramatic increase that we saw over the past 30, 40 years is leveling off. So we're not getting worse, but we're still not getting better yet. Okay, so next, I'd like to talk about some of the benefits of parks. And this picture actually shows Lafayette Square, which is not so far away from where we are now. And research suggests that having access to a park is good, as other folks have mentioned, not just for physical health, but mental health and well-being, but specifically relevant to what I'm talking about. It's been related to a reduced risk of obesity and greater physical activity. But there are some limitations to the existing literature. One of the biggest limitations is that a lot of the existing literature is cross-sectional, and so it looks at the relationship between access to parks and weight or BMI or physical activity at the same time. And so we don't know, well, is it that people who are physically active and are healthier are moving to where there are parks because they also have more resources, et cetera, or is living by a park actually having health benefits for the people who live there? I can mention one longitudinal study that was actually looking at children who, at the beginning of the study, were around 9 or 10, conducted by Walsh and her colleagues, where they found that those who had more park area nearby within 500 meters of home had lower BMI at age 18 than those with less park area. So some evidence for health benefits over time. In our current work, we had a couple of objectives. First of all, we wanted to look at this longitudinal relationship between having access to a park and changes in weight status over a period of about 6 years. And we also wanted to look at whether any longitudinal relationships were different from what we might see in a cross-sectional analysis. So we used data from the Los Angeles Family and Neighborhood Survey for this work, which is a multi-level population-based survey of families living in Los Angeles County. There are two waves of data available. That the first wave was collected between 2000 and 2002, and the second wave was collected between 2006 and 2008. Respondents for this survey were sampled from 65 census tracts throughout Los Angeles County, and there was an oversample from poor and very poor census tracts. In case there are folks here who aren't familiar with Los Angeles County, I just wanted to mention that Los Angeles County is actually very large, both geographically and in terms of its population. In 2000, when the data collection for LA fans began, there were over 9.5 million residents in Los Angeles County. It's more than that now, but I don't know off the top of my head what it is. And that means that the population of Los Angeles County is larger than 40 out of the 50 states in the U.S. It's also geographically large, covering more than 4,000 square miles. All right. So the other data source that we used was actually two data sources for parks and open space. The California Protected Areas database was one, which is called CPAD for short, and the other is land use data, which was available from the Southern California Association of Governments. CPAD is a GIS inventory of currently 49 million acres of protected open space in California. So it's a fairly comprehensive data source for park space within the state of California. It includes national, state, and regional parks, forests, preserves, wildlife areas, as well as large and small urban parks that are primarily open space. And it's maintained by Green Info Network, which is a nonprofit organization. And we cross-reference this CPAD data with the 2001 land use data because we wanted to make sure we were identifying parks that were actually available when Wave 1 data was collected between 2000 and 2002. So our outcome of interest was body mass index, which was calculated from self-reported height and weight that was actually collected at both the first wave or baseline and at the second wave 6 years later. We examined this as a continuous variable. And to look at access to parks, we actually constructed a number of indicators of access to parks. Those of you that are familiar with this literature looking at access to parks probably are aware that when researchers talk about access to parks, the way that they've measured it has varied a lot from study to study. And some researchers look at proximity, and some look at how much space is available. And so we wanted to try and capture a lot of these different ways that park access has been measured. We created four indicators that were area level indicators. So these are census tract level or neighborhood level variables. And these were the total number of park acres in the census tract, also park acres per 1,000 residents, so adjusted for the population of the tract, the number of parks in the census tract, and then park density, which was number of parks per square mile. We also created several residence-based indicators of access to parks. So these were based on geocoded household addresses, which is available in the LA Fans data with some restrictions applied, obviously, for confidentiality reasons. But our residence-based variables included the distance to the nearest park along the street network, as well as the straight line or Euclidean distance between the household and the nearest park. The number of park acres within a half mile of the residence and within 1 mile of the residence, and also the number of just parks within a half mile of residence and within 1 mile of the residence. We included several covariates in our analyses. Age, gender, race, ethnicity were specifically the groups that we were able to look at separately were Latino, Asian, African American, white, and multiracial. We also adjusted for family income or wealth. I say slash wealth because the measure collected in our data set asked about income and wages, but also assets like property that you own and that sort of thing. And this variable was log transformed in our analyses because it was skewed. So our actual analyses included 1,193 panel adults age 18 and older. So these were adults for whom we had data available in both the first and second wave of the survey. We also limited our analyses to adults who were living in the same census tract or neighborhood in both waves so that we didn't have to deal with whether someone lived, had different park access characteristics in their second wave where we're looking at their health outcome from wave one where the initial data was collected. We conducted multi-level regression models that adjusted for the covariates I mentioned earlier, and as well as included a random intercept for census tract to adjust for clustering. And we conducted both cross-sectional and longitudinal analyses. The cross-sectional analyses were conducted just within the wave one data. Our longitudinal analyses looked at the wave two BMI measure, adjusting for BMI measured at wave one. So the sample, the average age, and these are wave one characteristics, I should point out. The average age was 41.8. The sample was 48% female, 39% Latino, 38% white, and then you can see the other breakdown there. Our family income measure was on average $23,700 per family member. So we adjusted the income to the size of the family that was supported by that income. And then the average BMI at wave one was 25.9. And I didn't put it on the slide, but the average BMI at wave two was 26.9. So in our cross-sectional analyses, one of the census tract variables that one of the census tract level indicators of access to parks and four of the residence-based indicators were associated with BMI at wave one. And specifically, a greater number of parks in the census tract, having more park acres near the household within both the 1/2 and 1 mile distance of the household, and having just more parks near the household, both in 1/2 and 1 mile, within 1/2 and 1 mile of the household. These were all associated with lower BMI in the cross-sectional analyses. And in case you're interested in seeing the coefficients, here they are. I should point out that each of these lines is a separate model, so we did not attempt to run, obviously, models that included the same several different park access variables because they would all be highly correlated with each other, presumably. And the bolded indicators are the ones that were significant or marginally significant. Now, when we looked at the longitudinal analyses, the results looked a little bit different. Specifically, only one of those indicators of access to parks was marginally associated with changes in BMI over time. Specifically, greater park density at the census tract level, so having a greater number of parks per square mile, was associated with lower BMI at wave two, adjusting for those covariates that I talked about earlier, as well as adjusting for BMI at wave one. So this, again, shows the coefficients and the p-values. And you'll see that in the longitudinal models, none of the other variables, with the possible exception of number of parks within 1/2 mile, were even close to being significant in these longitudinal models. Other predictors of increases in BMI in the longitudinal models included, not surprisingly, having higher BMI at wave one, but also being black or multiracial relative to being white. And then predictors of decreases in BMI included, as I mentioned earlier, greater park density, but also being Asian relative to being white. In the longitudinal models, family wealth was not independently associated with changes in BMI. However, it was significantly associated with BMI in the cross-sectional models. It just was not predictive of changes in BMI over time. So I'd like to point out a few limitations. First, these results are from Los Angeles County, and so it's possible that they may not generalize to other areas, although Los Angeles is, as I mentioned, very large and very diverse. And other things to consider, though, is that we don't have data on the quality or conditions, equipment, or programming that is available at these parks in Los Angeles County, or I should say was available at these parks in Los Angeles County in 2001. As other folks have mentioned, these are factors that are important for whether people use the parks and are active in parks. And that leads me to another possible limitation, is that we have no information about whether or how the adults in this survey were using parks. But a couple of strengths I'd like to point out as well is that we looked at objectively measured access to parks that was operationalized in several ways to try and capture the diverse way that researchers have looked at access to parks in previous research. And also, we used longitudinal data, which allowed us to, or at least provide some evidence that access to parks actually preceded the changes in BMI that were observed. So in conclusion, there are inconsistencies between results based, or there may be, in our research there were inconsistencies between results from longitudinal analyses and from cross-sectional analyses. But what I was trying to say is that in our cross-sectional analyses, several of our measures of park access were related to BMI, but when we looked at our longitudinal analyses, only one of them was associated. It also looks like, based on these analyses, that measures that capture amount of park space or park density may be more strongly related to BMI than measures of how far away the nearest park is. Only because the distance measures were not related to BMI in these analyses in either the longitudinal or the cross-sectional models. So, well, what do we think this means? Well, there's some evidence that increasing density of parks can contribute to reduced BMI over 6 years, but given it needs to be taken in the context of the lack of significant findings for the other measures of access to parks. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but still some evidence that at least density of parks may be related over a relatively long period of time, 6 years. So the creation of places to engage in physical activity is still a recommended strategy for promoting physical activity, and unfortunately, our data set didn't include measures of physical activity in both time points. We weren't able to look at physical activity itself in longitudinal analyses, which I guess I could have mentioned as a limitation as well, but I'll mention it now. So thank you very much. And I think we're holding questions till the end, right? Yeah.